Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket with me, Simon Hughes, and Simon Mann. Thanks very much for all your emails about your scariest moments in cricket. We're going to review those and read some of those out next week. In the meantime, this week, we're not going to talk much. We're going to let our guests do that.
Now, in the past week, the former Gloucestershire and England player Mark Alleyne has told The Telegraph, "The numbers are disgusting." He was referring to the fact that he's the only black British county coach this century. Hampshire's Keith Barker, also in The Telegraph, suggested that black cricketers have to work that bit harder than white players for international recognition, unless they're superstars like Chris Jordan and Jofra Archer bowling 90 miles per hour. And the former England opener, Michael Carberry, told the Cricket Badger podcast, "To be honest, I think cricket is rife with racism."
The ECB have released a statement which went as follows. "In recent weeks, we have reflected and acknowledge that black players and fans who have contributed so much to the history of our game now feel disenfranchised. They do not feel as if cricket is a game for them. This must change." In this edition of the Analyst Inside Cricket, we're focusing on why there are so few black players, coaches and administrators in the English game, and what can be done about it. As you'll hear, there are two clear messages from our guests today.
We're going to hear from Roland Butcher, the first black player to play cricket for England. He speaks to us from his home in Barbados. And in the second half of this podcast, we're joined by the former England fast bowler Dean Headley, who was the son of West Indies opener Ron and the grandson of the great George Headley. Also, Rodney Hines, the sports editor of The Voice, Britain's leading black newspaper. 25-year-old pace bowler Abby Sakande, who left Sussex last summer and is looking for a new county. And commentator and former England player Ebony Rainford-Brent, who's the driving force behind a scheme in South London to find talented black cricketers, the response to which has been overwhelming. The message, the interest and talent is very definitely there.
So we've got a fascinating cast list for you today, and we're going to start with Roland Butcher. He was born in Barbados and moved to England at the age of 14. In fact, he played with me at Middlesex, and one thing that always struck us about Roland was his dynamic batting and scintillating fielding. In fact, we nicknamed him Hoover because he used to roar in off the boundary and pick everything up one-handed, almost as if he could suck it off the ground and then hurl the ball over the stumps to effect all sorts of run-outs. And it was that style and skill that earned him an England debut in 1980 against the West Indies in his home island of Barbados. He was, of course, the first black player to play for England, which he says fulfilled his own ambition to play international cricket, but was also very important for other black players in the English game.
Devon Malcolm has spoken to me many times and said exactly that
You know, he felt that, you know, it was an inspiration to me playing, because he suddenly started to get some belief that, you know, that if he really put in the work, that he could do it as well. And the same would have been for Will Slack and Norman and Neil Williams and Gladson Small and Chris Lewis and all the guys who came after that. So, you know, yeah, it certainly would have given those guys the motivation to work hard. At the time, for me, obviously, I was not thinking in that area. I was thinking of trying to carve out an international career. But much later in life, obviously, you would have realised the impact that it would have made.
Do you think that there are the same opportunities now for black cricketers to play, say, for England?
I think, Simon, I think the demographic has changed, certainly from my time, because, you know, if you think back to the time when we were youngsters playing the game in England, in every county, minor county, where there was a concentration of black families, you know, people were playing cricket. So the places like Reading and High Wycombe and Birmingham, et cetera, there were, you know, black people playing cricket. Men, children, everyone was playing cricket. And it was a very healthy situation. Now, I think what has happened, certainly since our time, Simon, is that most of the kids now born in England, and this was the case with my brothers as well. You know, I had two brothers who were born in England, and their focus was very much on football. You know, football is very well marketed. You know, they're seeing all of these black stars on their screens playing for all the different teams in England, the Premier Leagues, et cetera, et cetera. And really, they believe that there are more opportunities to be a football player than to be a cricketer. And also, if you think for the last 25 years, you know, you've had the decline in West Indies cricket team as a world power. And that has not helped the situation, because we're West Indians who were born here and lived in England, and those who were born in England back in those days felt a connection to the West Indies through that team and the performances of that team. For the last 25 years, they haven't had that connection. So basically, they have lost their connection to the West Indies. Perhaps they see the West Indies now purely as a place where they can vacation. And while you're on vacation, you know, you meet up with your extended family. I had a first cousin from my uncle, who was a very good cricketer, George, who was a very, very good cricketer. When he left Barbados to go to England to try and make a living, played some very good cricket, was offered a first-class contract to play cricket, but couldn't take it because of the amount of money that was being paid at the time. He could not support himself, family there, and a family back in Barbados. So he declined the offer to do that. But his son, George Jr., who was born in England, became a professional football player. And George played many, many years for West Ham. His name was George Parris. Played many years for West Ham as a defender. So while there was cricket in the family, but both me playing cricket and his father being, you know, cricketer as well, you know, he went into football, which I thought was natural because he was born in England and saw football as the way out.
Going back to cricket, what do you think we can do as a society to encourage black players to play more cricket? Do we need more black coaches? Are people feeling alienated from the game? You know, is there more we can do to encourage them?
Absolutely. There's a tremendous amount that can be done to do that. People do feel alienated. One, they're seeing very few black players playing at the top level. They're seeing no coaches or managers at the top level. So, you know, then people will get a feeling of a closed shop. So there's a tremendous amount that cricket can do in England to alleviate that fear. I was speaking at a meeting yesterday with John Neal, who you know, obviously, at the ECB. Mm. So we had a long conversation yesterday, and you know, we spoke about the, you know, a similar thing. So I think what really the ECB needs to do is to really develop situations where people can feel empowered. What has happened with the appointment of Vic Ransom-Lanky at Surrey is a good thing. But, you know, you're going to need more than just one, particularly in this time. Hopefully that will spark an interest in people wanting to be from the black community, wanting to be a first-class coach. But you need some work on the ground as well. You need a lot more work on the ground.
And I suppose someone like Jofra could be a catalyst in the same way, obviously, as Chris Jordan was before him, although Chris Jordan doesn't seem to have led to too many other black players, but maybe Jofra's prodigious success will.
Well, yes, but I think what will need to happen is that Jofra will have to become more than just an England player, because when his England career is over, will he leave England, or will he, what will he want to do next? So Jofra would have to stay in the system in England after his playing days to further inspire others to go that route. Who knows? When his career is over, he might go and live in Australia, or he might come back to the Caribbean. Who knows?
So anyway, you think that it's more important really to get people in the coaching, black people in the coaching structure, and there hasn't been enough encouragement?
I think that is true. But as I said, I don't think it's just a one-prong attack. I think there has to be development on all fronts. The opportunity for players, the opportunity for coaches, the opportunity for managers. Now, if it is felt and appear that there is a level playing field, then you will get people gravitating to work hard to achieve those positions. If it appears to be a closed shop, then naturally, people will go in a different direction, especially at a time now where generally people now have more choices than say many, many years ago. It's a job really for not just the ECB. I think the major counties, I think the minor counties, all of those people have a very important role to play, within their own community, to try and spread the game as far and wide as possible, because you just don't know what is out there.
Has there been, do you feel, in the last few weeks, a feeling of empowerment at all amongst the black community where you live, in the sporting sense?
Well, definitely. I mean, you've only got to listen to Jason Holder, who's currently in England with the West Indies team. And, I think he's speaking and really saying the sentiments of how people in Barbados and the Caribbean really feels about the whole issue. So because you're a sportsman, you're not immune from what is going on in the world, and also have feelings about it. So I think what has happened in the last couple of weeks is that, this wave and this feeling has vibrated around the whole world, really. I think people have sort of joined the bandwagon, so to speak, and this thing has spread like wildfire. So the Caribbean is exactly the same. I mean, right now there are peaceful demonstrations taking place in Barbados in relation to the removal of statues, etc., etc. Lord Nelson's statue is one they want removed from Broad Street, which is the main street here in Bridgetown, and many others. So that sort of thing is happening around the Caribbean. So it is very much a movement that I think that's come about because of the death of
George Floyd, yeah.
Floyd, and not just that. I think that really seemed to be the straw that broke the camel's back. It's also broken the camel's back at a time where, because of the pandemic and COVID-19, the world generally has been at home for the last few months. And being at home, they're on phones, they're on the computers, and the power of social media now is that, it gets to the other side of the world at the click of a button. So you've got a captive audience of all of these people being at home, not a great deal to do. And obviously, they joined the fight. What it's also done is it has made some people who, also because of having time on their hands, who have not spoken out in the past, but have just let things happen, have suddenly got a voice and want to say something about it. So it is something that is captivating the world right now, and the Caribbean is no exception.
Thought thoughtful stuff from Roland Butcher there, and it's amazing to think, in a way, given the number of black players there were in English cricket in the 70s and 80s, that it took as long as 1980 for a black player to make his way into the England team, as Butch did. And there have been a sequence since, of course, a lot in the 1980s and 90s, the likes of Devon Malcolm and Gladstone Small and Wilf Slack, of course, as you mentioned, Norman Cowans. Latterly, Ricky Elcock actually got a call-up for England without actually playing a game. And then there was Chris Lewis and Phil De Freitas in the 90s as well. And then the supply seemed to dry up. And really, since 2000, there have only been three black players playing for England. That's Michael Carberry, of course, and then latterly, Chris Jordan, and now Jofra Archer. So it's interesting how the numbers seem to have declined. So let's open this up now to the forum we have with us today. And as Simon mentioned, we've got Dean Headley, we've got Abhi Sikande, who has recently pulled back from his career at Sussex. We've also got Rodney Hines from The Voice newspaper in South London, and later we'll be joined by Ebony Rainford-Brent. So the first question I'd like to ask you guys is, is there racial discrimination in cricket still, in English cricket? And if so, how does it manifest itself? Dean, let's start with you. You're the schoolmaster at Stamford School, so you've had wide experience in the game at all levels. What's your take on it?
I think there's racial discrimination in life. I don't think it's just confined to cricket. I don't think it's any worse in cricket or any less, you know, any less in cricket. It's just part of life, part of the world, and we need to strive to get better at giving everybody opportunity. And that's not just, we're talking about whether that's racial discrimination, but there's also discrimination in many other ways, and it happens in different countries in different ways as well. So when we say racial discrimination, it is about every sort of race. It's not just black, white, Eastern European, it's everything. So that's my take on it.
Rodney, you're working in the community in South London a lot. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I feel there is discrimination. I mean, I think the stats bear that out. We don't see too many black cricketers representing, say, the England team now, the way that used to occur. I think there is an issue. It has to be resolved, and I think I cover all sports, and we look at, say, football, for example, having a challenge or two. I think cricket has a challenge or four, for example. I think the game's deep traditions and heritage and everything that goes with that has contributed to where we are right now. But I'm a great believer that in order to solve some of these issues, we need to have these sort of forums. We need to keep it at the top of the agenda, not the bottom. And I think those that are now making decisions within the game have to see this as a priority. As I said, not fourth or fifth on the agenda list anymore. I think now we need to push on and to see change.
We'll explore the idea of the necessity for change and what that change could look like in a moment. But Abhi, you've had a career with Sussex. You decided not to continue with that. Did you sort of experience any discrimination in your career, and also perhaps explain why you decided not to carry on playing cricket professionally?
Well, for me, I don't think my decision to do with the cricket was anything to do with race. I think discrimination definitely exists within cricket. I'll counter slightly what Dean was saying, that I think right now the issue is definitely to look at off the back of George Floyd and off the back of the momentum that the Black Lives Matter movement has generated, that it is time to look at cricket and race specifically, and the treatment of black people across society, and, you know, and our job today is also to look at how that affects us in the world of cricket. You know, we know that the stats say that there's maybe under 2% of, you know, black cricketers playing in England professionally, compared to at the population level. That's a massive underrepresentation. And although the ECB have put out statements about that they support diversity, we've got to also look at, is the next generation of cricketers going to be coming through? Is there going to be any diversity amongst that, you know, next generation if they don't actually do anything about it? We've seen that the ECB did a bit of research about South Asian participation in the game, and they put out their South Asian Action Plan a couple of years ago. And some of the findings that they made from that research massively apply within the world of cricket being a very white world, being perceived as a very white world, being perceived as having specific barriers to not just to playing and progressing through pathways, but also through coaching and participation in management levels. And if that's the case for, you know, people from Asian backgrounds, that's 100% also going to be the case for people from black backgrounds as well. And my own personal decisions to do with my career were more to do with opportunities that I felt that I was going to be maybe limited in how much opportunity I was going to get going forwards at Sussex. So it wasn't specifically anything to do with, you know, there's just a lot of fast bowlers, a lot of competition. My performances in last season didn't quite match up to what I wanted to get out of it. So that's just how things play out sometimes. But definitely, I think that at a structural level, we've got to look at, you know, the ECB, and they've got to make a response to this. They've got to start actually looking at the numbers, do some of the surveys, find out what the situation is, you know, use the data, arm yourself with the data, and then we can look at what type of a change we can make.
Just to respond to that, I'd had a long interview with Roland Butcher the other day, who of course was England's first ever black cricketer, and you know, his view about why there are not a lot less black players in English cricket now compared to certainly when we played, when I played, when we had, you know, I had four in my Middlesex team, was that they're more interested in football now. And so rather than there being a sort of racial discrimination against black players in cricket, perhaps it's just the fact that more black people, young black people, want to play football rather than cricket. It's a choice.
I think there is a competition that we have to compete for the best athletes. I don't think cricket does. I don't think cricket does across whatever race. I don't think we get the best white players. I don't think we always get the best black players. The one thing that we talk a lot. We do a lot of surveys and we do this, and we've known the problem for a long time. You know, even when you go back to when we were playing, you can say you had four players in your side, but then there was more actually on the staff of Middlesex. But then you start looking at the real reasons. So you've got to start saying, so Tower Hamlets, it's not got a cricket ground. So then you've got facilities. So if there's no facilities, you can't get people to go and play cricket because it's expensive. So you're not going to travel 20 miles outside your borough to go and play cricket. So we know these issues. If there are no facilities, you will not get people playing. Now then, I'm a schoolmaster. I don't see the level of investment into grassroots, into club level, and the control of the game by the ECB goes much beyond first-class cricket. And so I hear about schemes about Asians, and then we'll have a scheme about black players, and then we'll do this. But then it's all talk. In fact, I'd rather not have a scheme, not talk about it, but just do it. And just get on with it, because we don't need a title. We just need action. And that action isn't just, I see a problem getting teenagers playing cricket, period. Right? There's a bigger problem within inner cities. So I haven't looked at the stats, but I would say the mass majority of our black community live near cities. But there's no cricket ground in cities. So therefore, we've got to find a way of getting cricket grounds or facilities, or take the game, or provide some sort of game that you can play in a cage, or get people just participating first of all. Surely we've just got to get in the community, start engaging and start competing. Because you're right, Roland Butcher was the first black player to play for England. Yeah. Laurie Cunningham was the first English footballer to pull an England shirt at under 23 level, followed by Viv Anderson at full international. I understand this situation because I supported West Brom. So I used to sit in grounds with 15,000 people shouting nigger, you know, and watching Batson and Cunningham and Regis, right? And my dad sitting there, me sitting there, we went every week to home games. We weren't too bad at home games, but then if you went to an away game, it was awful.
But, I mean, that was 40 years ago, obviously. I mean, it was terrible, clearly. I mean, hopefully we've improved a bit since then.
No. But, Simon, we haven't just improved. We've massively improved. And so we do scaremonger, and it's not going away, but we've got to get better. But let me get this right. You got two people making monkey noises in Tottenham out of 60,000 people. We put it on TV for 2 weeks and debate and make these people notorious. Ban them, don't talk about it, just kick them out. Because two people with whatever they want to do, they're just stupid people in 60,000 people. Don't, let's not make that an issue. It's not right, kick them out, whatever. But don't give them, don't put them on TV. Don't stir up the business so that other people think, oh, I want to be notorious.
Rodney, you're working in South London, in a sort of inner city area. Is it a problem? Is it the facilities, in a way, which is what Dean was sort of most intimate?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's facilities. I mean, that's a starting point. But I mean, I think I said at the top of the piece, this isn't a one-size-fits-all remedy, yeah? Cricket has to open its doors and welcome people that traditionally wouldn't play or support it. I have covered games up and down the country, and I know, Dean knows, you all know that people from the Caribbean, especially more so than Africa, for example, love the game of cricket still. Okay, it may not be as popular, but I don't know how welcome they feel. I don't know how catered they are. I was watching, I think, Fire in Babylon the other day, and I know that was a long time ago, but you could see what it did, win, lose or draw, for the community. And I think the taking away of flags and whistles and that sort of fun element of cricket has chipped away at people that would love to go to games but feel that there's no place for them. I mean, come on, we must all know that Lord's is viewed by a lot of people as quite clearly the home of cricket. But home for who? Do you know what I mean? So Dean is absolutely right. We need facilities, but I think the game now has an opportunity to reinvent itself a little bit and welcome people. And at the end of the day, we can't get it twisted that I think that the Caribbean community, and you're absolutely right, I think football, Premier League football, the NBA has distracted a lot of people from the game of cricket. But there's still an awful lot of people that love the game, but don't feel that they can go to a game, or that they'll be welcome, or they'll be able to celebrate the game itself the way they knew they could.
I mean, Rodney, it's really interesting that cricket, when you look at a team that goes for 15 years unbeaten in any country without a top class spinner, go to India, Pakistan, everywhere. How many documentaries have been done on that team? Hardly any. And yet, you could probably, stats-wise, say it's the greatest period of a team in any sport in any era.
Absolutely.
And yet, it's not celebrated. You know, the rules were changed. You know, Michael Olden said, you know, why stop people being bounced? They have more protection now than ever. And yet, we systematically broke that team down to say, right, they came up with something, we're going to stop them doing it. And again, Rodney's right, that in the crowd, you know, the Oval was a carnival.
Yeah.
And now, you know, you blow a whistle or you take, you know, it started where you're banning the steel drums coming in. Now you're going to ban the conch shells being done. You know, everybody that I talk to goes out to the West Indies. They're really disappointed now that the West Indies is not that festival. Yeah. Of cricket, you know,
it's
where...
It's interesting, actually, because I'm one of my first test matches I ever attended in 1973 was a West Indies test at Lord's, and I remember sitting in the Compton Edric stand and, you know, all that noise, you know, the bells, the drums, the conch shells, etc. It was a most fantastic atmosphere, and I'm on the MCC committee at Lord's. I mean, we tried to encourage them to be a bit more open-minded about noise and everything, but it's the neighbourhood, you know, it's things like borough councils and people in the neighbourhood complaining. It's a shame, but you know, that's that's just a sort of little tiny but I suppose important key to what you're saying here. And people feel alienated, you know, the black community sort of feels slightly alienated from cricket, perhaps.
But I mean, I think when we see Pakistan and India play, they replicate what the West Indies fans were doing years ago. There's colour, there's music, there's drums. And with all due respect, it adds to the spectacle. So to, if you took away what India and Pakistan fans bring to the game, there would be no game as far as I'm concerned, because they bring something special. And I think that, and we've got to say as well, that the West Indies' lack of success over the years hasn't helped in terms of interest. So as I said, I think that if you join all the dots together, that's why things are the way they are. I mean, I go to games, I do T20 games as well, and I am positively made up when I see a black player now. Do you know what I mean? Because they are so rare. And I'm thinking, this is strange. I grew up with black men being highly successful in this most traditional of games.
We talk about facilities and not being welcome. Abby, you're 25. You've been playing county cricket relatively recently. What was your route into playing professional cricket?
Well, for me, it was basically through friends who introduced me to the game. I've grown up in Sussex, which is obviously a very kind of white area of the country. And I've got, you know, I'm very lucky to have parents that took me from the state school where I started off and sent me to a private school where, you know, there was facilities for me to play sport. And it's definitely a very common pathway that, you know, if you're at a private school where they offer sports and they offer you training, and, you know, then there's a chance for you to progress. And it was never something that my family had much background in. You know, like I said, my dad's from West Africa. Cricket's not really a big deal over there. And so it was just kind of the environment I was in. I happened to be good at it, and I feel like I progressed through the system because, you know, I got picked out early as having potential. But I would definitely say that whatever area you're from, there's definitely some of the factors that you're talking about is there's the stereotype kind of creates reality in a way. So if you don't see, you know, you don't expect black people or black kids to participate in certain sports like cricket or, you know, then it's going to get a stereotype, a bit like golf, you know, or horse riding. They're perceived as very, very white, very elite, very hard to access sports. And it's the question of in the future, do you want cricket to be known as, you know, a sport that's more like golf or some of these sports that are very, very, you know, kind of members only exclusive, and, you know, black people around the country aren't going to want to feel part of that? Or do you want it to be, you know, more like football, where that people feel like there's a chance? And definitely, I think facilities is a massive issue. And, you know, having been to a private school myself, I can very much, you know, I'm very much aware of the fact that there is facilities available there. And I question why haven't, you know, the ECB potentially looked at, you know, is there some way of, you know, sharing the resources around so that if you're from the local state school down the road, you know, you can have a tournament, or you can be able to use the facilities when they're not being used by the private schools. You know, can the ECB put some funding models in or something to enable coaches, you know, because the private schools pay their coaches, right? They have cricket masters who are employed purely for that. You know, do clubs, you know, can they afford to pay full-time coaches, or is it just community coaches from the county level? And, you know, if there's not somebody being employed full-time in order to actually provide cricket outside of that private school system, then of course we're going to get this very kind of elitist, very restricted group of people who are going to be able to progress into the professional game. So it's definitely a structural issue as much as it's an individual.
So the idea of, well, facilities and welcome sense of, yeah, you're welcome, yeah, we want to include you in this game. Are those the two big issues, or are there other issues as well?
As I said, I think one of the other issues is a lack of success for, say, the West Indies team. It is also the fact that we don't see, well, we have Jofra Archer now, but they almost seem to come through one at a time. Wolf Slack, obviously, as well. Dino. We just want to see more. It's a little bit like Formula One. There has to be another Lewis Hamilton for Lewis's legacy to really kick in. Do you know what I mean?
But you talk about Jofra Archer, right? This young man goes in. He takes the pressure of the World Cup. He's thrown the ball at the very end. And yet, within weeks, his character comes into question.
Yeah, absolutely right.
You know, it's like the Laurie Cunningham. I mean, I don't know whether you've seen the documentary, but it's a fantastic BBC documentary on him. With Archer, it's sort of like, well, you're going back to the stereotypes of, well, is he strong enough? Is he mentally strong enough? Is he weak? Going back, is he lazy?
Yeah.
right? We shouldn't be saying about that. We should be saying to him, you know, we believe you are the person that can lead English cricket, and but we are taking him down already.
Yeah, those stereotypes you're talking about, though, Dino, those were the same stereotypes that were labelled to black footballers in the early days. They couldn't play.
They couldn't play in the cold.
They had no leadership skills. They didn't have the bottle, whatever terminology you want to use. And this is why I say Jofra Archer is fantastic. But what you do need is that England team on merit, clearly not because they're black, but on merit, you almost need those facilities, that encouragement, that they're welcome to the game, so that an England team in the future has two or three, four or five black men in it, all on merit. But it's a side issue as well. But you're right. What the, you cannot be surprised, Dino, that when Jofra did what he did, that the negative headlines would follow. Because that's what we do. That's what we do, isn't it?
Well, we do a little bit with our own sportsmen anyway. But it's just that we've been crying out for, you know, I mean, you've got Chris Jordan, you've got, we've had black players. But, you know, this is a bloke who's just come from nowhere and then just dominated. He's gone to the Big Bash. You know, he's got something about him. He's got that X factor. It's just really disappointing to see when we are trying to knock down somebody who could do so much good in this game. And it is about competing. But, Yoz, one thing, and I will give credit, Owen Morgan took that team and he has recognised everybody as an individual in that team. And we can knock people, but I've got to say that I think Owen Morgan's leadership has been unbelievable.
Spot on. Absolutely spot on. And he talked about diversity. The diversity of that team, that World Cup winning team, was what got them over the line. Do you know what I mean? There were South Africans in that team, Owen himself, Jofra Archer. It was fantastic. It just shows once again, not just in sport, but whether it be the NHS, whether it be in blue chip companies, the diversity of your personnel can be for the benefit of the good. And that's why I think cricket is missing out.
Yeah, I mean, just to pick up on the issue about Archer, I think it's really interesting, actually, that there's this sort of subtle discrimination going on, because one of the things that he did was, when he loosened up in the morning, he didn't do a kind of customary hard sort of 10, 12 fast balls before the game. He would bowl left-arm spin before the game. And Trevor Bayliss at one point said, you know, there's a few people kind of muttering about that, looking as if you're not trying in training. Maybe you need to actually bowl some proper deliveries rather than just running up to bowl your left-arm spin. But to Jofra, bowling left-arm spin was his way of relaxing into the game to, you know, get him mentally sort of ready for play. That's what he did. That's what he wanted to try and do in a sort of routine kind of way.
It's like Gower.
And it was
Gower's
exactly,
the same.
Yeah. And but it was our narrow-mindedness, in a way. I'm not blaming Trevor Bayliss for this, but, you know, it was our narrow-mindedness to see that as a to perceive that as he wasn't trying. That was just his way of doing it.
But Simon, that was just a case of someone from a different background to what we're all used to, say, in the English game at that level, just doing something different. And that's why I say it's diversity of thinking as well. And did it come up trumps on the greatest day that this country has enjoyed for a long while in terms of cricket? And that's why I'm saying, on merit, clearly, but the diversity of difference can bring something fresh and exciting to a game that, with all due respect, in my opinion, could do with that freshness. And what you do with that freshness, it opens doors. It opens doors to others. I mean, listen, I'm based in South London, and I know that Jofra Archer is a hero to many young people, of whatever colour, because he's coming and it's about relatability. People can now see what he's done, and more importantly, the success has been there as well. Because if England had lost that final or not even got to the final, you then can't hook people's interest to it. But the fact that they went all the way, add the fact the highly dramatic circumstances as well, Jofra Archer, for me, he's a cricketer first and foremost, should be used as a sounding board or some sort of individual to help change the narrative about cricket. There needs to be a will from those that run the game in this country.
No, it's all right. I mean, and I was off the back of that, I was just saying that at the moment, are we getting those levels of recognition about this issue from, you know, from the ECB, you know, from the organisations within cricket that are meant to be, you know, organising some of this stuff? Because, you know, in the first place, their response to the Black Lives Matter, you know, was a tweet about, you know, we stand against racism, we stand for diversity. And while that's like, you know, that's fine, it's an 8-word statement about, you know, a black man who's been killed due to police brutality, you know, somebody kneeling on his neck for 9 minutes, and the seriousness of the issue compared to the response. And I feel like, especially when you you saw in, you know, it was about a week ago that the ECB put out an actual more considered statement about, you know, what that Black Lives Matter means to them and what, you know, that they're going to combat racism in the sport. And reading through some of the tweets, instantly you see the pushback that, you know, that's coming from the ECB, from you know, people in England who are following the ECB Twitter account and coming back and saying, I don't know why we're talking about this. The ECB should be focusing on other things. So I think, like, there's definitely an issue here where, again, unless you get the kind of the authorities to actually understand what the issue is, and, you know, and Rodney, you're talking about a diversity of thought. And Simon, you're saying you're on the MCC committee. You know, how much diversity of thinking that is there on the MCC committee? You know, are there any faces who aren't, you know, of the traditional kind of mould of, you know, of thinking and of colour and you know, and of background, who are represented? You know, and if there aren't any of those people who having their voices represented, then how are we going to, you know, how are we going to get an acknowledgement that needs to be changed, and therefore how are you going to get change in the next 15 years? Because people will basically see, we don't think there's a problem. It's easier to stick our heads in the sand and continue on the same pathway like we have done in the past. And none of these, you know, issues will be realised. And I definitely think amongst the other black cricketers around the country that I've been talking to, there's definitely a discomfort with even raising the issue, you know, because there's so few people in a dressing room. It's not something that you're going to be comfortable to either talk to a teammate about, because it's going to be potentially critical of, you know, people in and around. And it's not something that you're going to feel that there's going to be people in the management, if you felt like there was an experience that you wanted to report, who are you going to talk to about it? There's nobody really there who's there to listen. So I've been trying to push the PCA recently in order to A, come out with a statement to support their players, and say that, you know, that they're there to listen, and B, create a group or create a space where the black cricketers can maybe like talk to each other and, you know, maybe find some support, because there are so few. That it's one of those issues that, you know, and the PCA have committed just recently that they're going to create a working group, which is, you know, it's just a start, that they're going to get representatives from, you know, the ECB. They've already said that they're going to talk to the PFA about what they've done to combat racism in the sport. And it is a start, an acknowledgement of the issue is where you've got to start. And like, I totally agree with you, it's got to be a long-term project. It's got to be change over the next 15 years. But the change that we can have today is, you know, simple things like acknowledge the issue, start to, you know, look at the resources and look at the you know, the people and the experiences that are going on, understand what's going on. And we saw the Premier League start the other day and they had Black Lives Matter on the back of their shirts. You know, why can't the ECB think about doing something like that in the upcoming Test Series against the West Indies? You know, start to acknowledge that there's an issue and that cricket is not exempt. If there's racism in society, you're going to get racism in cricket. We want to have longer-term solutions as well to this. You know, educating people about unconscious bias is only shown to have an impact for, you know, for a very short space of time, and then people kind of go back to what they were doing before. So actually, if we want to make longer-term differences in terms of within the sport, we've got to have longer-term plans, and that goes back to what we were talking before about facilities and private schools and state schools and accessibility and role models and everything we've been talking about so far. But it is good to see that the, you know, the PCA, with a bit of pressure applied, are starting to take this issue seriously and starting to try to make moves and put together some kind of structure whereby we can push for change.
Okay, we're pleased to be joined now by Ebony Rainford-Brent, of course, the well-known commentator and former England player. And you're very involved, Ebs, in Surrey, in the community there, both with women's cricket and cricket generally. So you've started a campaign sort of linked to all this momentum of Black Lives Matter. Can you explain? That's called ACE.
Yeah, so we started the ACE programme back in January, so kind of before this current move happened. And you know, we had a number of conversations within the organisation. You take the Oval, for example. Lambeth is one of the highest density areas in the whole country for people from black backgrounds. It's where I was born and came through the game. It's got 42% of the youngsters aged 10 to 19 are black. So walking past the gates of the doors every day, we're talking about 33,000 people, and God knows how many, you know, 25 years I've been coming through the gate. We haven't had another one sort of successful, have a county to career, male or female. That's a lot of people that we've missed. So we decided to set up a talent scout. And one thing I think is really important during these conversations that we dispel a number of myths. So I hear from the cricket world that the black community don't care and they're not engaged. We launched this and straight away our phones were ringing off the hooks. We had talent come through for our trial days. We had to double the number of scholarships because of the amount of talent we found. We think there's three that potentially could be fast-tracked straight into the system. And there was actually quite a high level of performance. Now, interestingly, nearly half were not affiliated to any cricket club or traditional cricket club. But what we did see is the ones who had a level of talent did have some sort of cricket club, but some of those clubs aren't really getting support from the existing system. So I think there's a few things to dispel. One, I think people say black community don't care. I think that's absolutely nonsense. They're not all playing football. There's not a complete loss. There's been a disconnection from our game and the black community. Two, I would say that the club infrastructures that do exist for the black community are not resourced well enough and supported well enough to build into functioning teams that can have facilities to be able to play in, league structures that exist. So again, that acts as a barrier. Three, I would say the inner city, the facilities that we've had to look at to redesign some of our work shows that there is not enough activity taking place on the non-turf pitches, and there is no junior club in the whole of Lambeth, yet still it's the most densely populated area. It's a big area of London. So I think I just want to throw in here that, you know, I think that we think the game is broken and there's a reason. The reason why we haven't seen black players come through is because, unlike rugby and football, which are getting into these communities, we are not. We are still servicing from the traditional kind of pathways that lead from private schools and traditional cricket clubs. And that's, I think, the most important thing I want to say is that we need to just get out there, because if we do, we can completely change the landscape.
Can I just ask you, Ebony?
Yeah.
That is in Lambeth and everything like that.
Mm.
I also feel it doesn't happen. We're lazy all over the country looking for its talent. Absolutely lazy. So in my mind, what you're doing, you're in a community, you're doing what you should be doing in a community anyway. And if we do that all over the country, we will have far more. You know, rugby does it, football does it, the number of scouts that go out across the country. So I it's not that I'm not making this a situation within that Lambeth itself, but we have a problem with cricket systematically anyway, because, you know, yeah, the clubs have to put kids into county trials. We shouldn't be doing that. We should be going out and finding kids to be in county trials, not the other way around. And it's so much money to be there. So the fact that what Ebony's talking about, when you think about it, it's just common sense to get people into playing cricket. Whether they're black, yellow, blue, pink, green spots, it doesn't matter. What you're doing is brilliant, but to be honest, that could be done in an area with no black people, or in Bradford with Asian people. And that's my problem. We're just very good at talking about stuff. And what Ebony's done is got a committee together. They've acted. It's in their area, so Surrey have taken responsibility for their area.
I completely agree with you, Dean. I think, you know, my background as well, socioeconomically, came from a working class background. Again, like you say, it's nothing to do with colour. I think our game isn't diverse enough in terms of socioeconomic groups as well. You're right. It just takes a little bit of work. I would say what we set up, we just got moving and we set it up within a 2 or 3 weeks of thinking. We got out there and the response was ridiculous. The community were ready to engage. You know, local newspapers, local radios, it was crazy. Our phone was ringing so much, we couldn't believe it. So I think you're right. We have kind of nurtured those existing pathways that existed in the game for a long time. You know, nothing wrong with those. We need to keep those pathways coming. They've done a very good job at producing cricketers over the years. But we're not reaching out to wider communities, and hence, we're most probably losing a pool of talent. We're losing sport to players to athletics. Athletics has got ridiculous talent coming through. Imagine if we stole someone who couldn't quite run 10 seconds in 100 metres, but he or she was running 10 and a half seconds and happen to be able to bowl the ball pretty quickly or, you know, hit the ball out of the park. We are missing waves of talent. I look at our female athletes and I sometimes think, how comes netball, for an example, as a sport, has these athletes who are 6 foot plus, very athletic. You put a cricket ball in their hand or a bat in their hand and how productive they could be. We're just not reaching out. And so I think you're completely right, Dean, that cricket has not broken down any of these moulds. Why, I don't know, when other sports are doing it. You know, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to these national meetings that sports do around how you reach out to talent, how you develop talent. Why we haven't, you know, that I don't know. But what I'm aware of, and just from a small programme we've launched, there is talent out there. And the worst thing that I think breaks my heart more is there are actually kids out there that we saw come through this programme who are not getting supported in club environments but love the game and are playing it and somehow actually coming out with ridiculous skills without any sort of access to facilities or structures or environments that will nurture that. So that's a message to us that not only are we not encouraging new people into the game, there are people already who love the game who are not getting supported.
Well, I'm sure we could talk about this for hours, but we'd better put a stop there. And I've certainly found it really illuminating. It's been an education, actually, an absolute insight into the issues facing some black sportsmen and women and some solutions as well. It sounds as if we should stop all the talking and start some acting, as, of course, Ebony Rainford Brent already has. Thank you very much to her and also to Rodney Hines, to Dean Headley and to Abby Sakande for their contributions. Hope you've found it as interesting as we have. Just a final word to say that the new Cricketer magazine is out this week and it features a preview of the England-West Indies series coming up and also a big celebration of county cricket with 50 years covered from 1970 onwards with some very interesting new writers. It's a great package, a real celebration of the county game, which features, of course, a lot of black players as well as ones of white and Asian descent as well. And you can subscribe to that by going to www.thecricketer.com/subscribe. We'll be back next week when, of course, we'll pick up on your scariest moments in cricket stories, which you've been emailing to us. And if you've got any more of those or you want to make some comments about this programme, you can send them to simon.hughes@thecricketer.com. And we'll look at all your emails with great interest. simon.hughes@thecricketer.com. Thanks very much for listening. Speak to you next week.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.